Everyone, welcome to today's episode of Work Life Stories. Today's discussion is all about house moves. I was really pleased when we did a feedback survey recently that the topic of moving house came up as something that Work Life Central members were keen to hear about from us. It's a topic that's very close to my heart as I moved out of London just over 3 years ago, which was an amazing move for our family, but it was an incredibly stressful and difficult time. And there's quite a lot that I rather wish I had known back then. So it's great to hear that other people are interested too. I wonder if the increase in hybrid and remote working is prompting a few moves away from big towns and cities post-COVID. So I obviously wanted to think about some willing interviewees for this topic, and I remembered Laura Wheeler and Caroline Murphy, who are wonderful contributors to our regular blog, have both written about moving house. So I have got in touch with them, and they're very kind enough to give me an hour of their busy days to chat to me this morning. I'm going to hand over now to Laura to tell a little bit more about you, Laura, and what prompted your move.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. I have two young children. They are now 3 and 5. I work full time for an asset manager and I work in operations. So when my eldest, when she was coming up to one, we hoped to expand our family, and it became quite apparent that our flat in Balham in South London was going to be quite small. We were rapidly outgrowing it. And so we started the process of moving. And we looked at different areas, we put our place on the market, and we ended up moving a year later. It took quite a long time. It actually turned out to be great timing because it was 6 months before the pandemic. So it was a really big emotional step for me. It was a big milestone in my life, and looking forward to telling people more about it.
Perfect. Thank you, Laura. And what about you, Caroline? You've moved a little bit further afield.
Yeah, so I'm Caroline Murphy. I'm a vice president of investment risk with an asset manager, and I work full time. I'm a mum to two little girls, and our family of four relocated back to Ireland 2 months ago, and that was after 16 years of living in London. So we made the decision to move in March off the back of this job offer that I had received in Ireland. My husband's also Irish, and he has wanted to move back to Ireland for about 15 of the 16 years. But when we actually sat down and considered the opportunity, it really felt like it was a now or never type of move. At the time we made the decision, the girls were 6 and 3, and my older one was just in year one. So it felt like it'd be an easier transition now rather than 5 years down the line. Like, once we made the decision, it was a real eye-opener. Information only became available on a need-to-know basis, which wasn't very helpful. But we're 2 months out the other side now. We're happy with the move. We've achieved a lot, but there's no doubt it was a very hard slog.
Can imagine. That's great to hear. Thank you both for telling us a little bit about your moves. We start just talking about the kind of practical side of a house move. Caroline, I'm conscious that when anyone plans a move, you always talk about having our ducks in a row, as the, you know, the job, the schools, the house, all those kind of things. Yours was obviously driven first and foremost by a job offer. How did it then play out? You obviously then had to find someone to live over that.
Yeah, I acknowledge my situation is a bit different because we moved country, but I think a lot of the points are relevant to anybody who's undergoing a move. Even though I grew up in Ireland, all my family are there, and I do feel I belong in Ireland, I've never actually been a functioning adult in Ireland. Naturally, I'm quite a planner, I think, through all of the steps. So my list of practical bits, even before I actually accepted the job offer, it was quite long, and it included finding a school that would accept the girls off the run. And by that, I mean, we were targeting a September start date, but we were applying after all offers had been made to children, putting our house on the market, and then trying to work out how to align that with a purchase in another country. So for example, we had to figure out an expat mortgage, if you could complete on the same day across borders, trying to efficiently even plan how to view houses in another country and minimize the amount of flights we needed. Something like opening a bank account, it's very tricky if you don't live in the country. Very few banks actually offer you an account without an address in Ireland. And then there's the larger bucket that my husband used to laugh at when I used to call it replicating our infrastructure. So by that, I mean our after-school childcare, our swimming lessons, the dentist, hairdresser's doctor, dog daycare, milk deliveries, everything that I felt I picked the phone up to somebody about over the years and had embedded as part of our family's working routine. So I really struggled throughout this with the circular reference nature of all those points. So you need the equivalent of a national insurance number. It's called a personal public service number to have a bank account, and you need an address. And it's the same for the schools, but if you're not there, you don't have those. So where do you even start? And I came up against a lot of computer said no kind of moments. Now, I should say there are all issues I faced when I moved to London 16 years ago, but at the time it was just me, no kids, no husband, no dog, and no awareness, frankly. You know, it was just an adventure. And then I suppose you have to consider that when you think you're done and you've actually moved, you actually need to turn around and close out all of those items from where you're actually leaving.
That's so helpful, Caroline, to hear all about those intricacies of the move, particularly when moving countries, just as you say. But there's an awful lot to think about, isn't there, wherever you move. How about you, Laura? How did the practical side play out for you? Were you able to plan as much as you can with these things?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a big planner as well. And if I don't have lots of plans, then I can get quite anxious. And I say that this move was probably the biggest project I've ever done, just kind of trying to think about all the different parts. And I hadn't done anything like this before. I'd always been in rentals and then ended up in this flat. So clearing out, going through 10 years worth of stuff and just trying to figure out what we were going to keep, what we were going to get rid of. And from a childcare perspective, we were okay, because my youngest, she wasn't even one, and I was still on maternity leave whilst we started the process. But because the process took so long, we ended up having something like 60 viewings on our flat, which was grueling. I was well back at work by the time we actually moved. And then I had this kind of thing in my head that I wanted to come to terms emotionally with the move by doing all the packing myself. And I would not do that again, because it was so time consuming. And also, I didn't even think about, you've got to make up all these boxes and keep them in your house whilst you're packing some more stuff. And our flat was already small. So I would actually try and get some help with the packing next time. And after about 2 days of packing, I was like, okay, I'm emotionally adjusted to this now. I don't need to keep doing this. The conveyancing stuff was time consuming, but we had really great solicitors. We had some complications because we shared the freehold with a neighbour. She was extremely busy, and trying to get her to sign documents when she was travelling a lot, that was tricky. But it took us so long to try and line up everything that by the time it actually came, I felt a lot more ready than I had at the start of the process. So looking back, the fact it took us nearly a year was not a bad thing.
I think you're absolutely right. I think these things just take certainly much longer than I had anticipated. I remember very quickly having, you know, offers accepted, asking when we could exchange contracts. I wish someone had said to me, just slow down, because it's just not going to happen that quickly. In fact, maybe they did and I just didn't listen. It's quite possible. And actually, that's interesting, that helped you adjust to it. When we moved, my daughter was school age, a similar age to Caroline's eldest actually when we moved, but we were trying to fit it all into school holidays. Our aim was really to move over the summer holidays, which I'm sure is very ambitious and what a lot of people are trying to do, and it doesn't always work that way. So we were trying to exchange contracts ahead of completion to give us that kind of breathing space to kind of book everything that we needed to, including school places. And we ended up exchanging contracts on the Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock. The packers came, we had packers, that was good, on Sunday. We moved Monday. My son started nursery Tuesday and my daughter started school Wednesday. So it was incredibly pressured timeframes. And of course they won't, well, the impression you get is that you can't apply for a school place until you have an address, which is correct, but we weren't moving in a reception application year. And because they had space in the school, we actually applied from our old address. So from the school's point of view, they knew we'd been around and we were planning to move, and they did accept our place from our London address. So from their point of view, they can completely do that. Whether you're planning to commute from Southwest London to Essex is up to you. But that was quite helpful to know, I think, that we were able to do it that way. If the whole thing had fallen apart, we'd have just reapplied to our old school, which again, we needed more places. So you can do it that way if it's not competitive for places, I think, and if you've got a fair amount of confidence and that the school is aware of what your plans are, I think. So yes, lots of practical bits and pieces to take into consideration during these house moves, and incredibly time consuming to make all those plans and make sure that they all happen smoothly. But what about the more emotional adjustment that needs to happen. Laura, you alluded to this around actually packing, feeling that that was quite a cathartic process for you. How did you make that adjustment? And, you know, to what extent did you feel that your identity is actually quite linked to where you live? And how did you find that process?
Yeah, thanks, Anna. It was extremely emotionally significant for me leaving our flat, but also leaving London. We ended up moving to East Hertfordshire. So similar to Caroline. So I moved to London when I was 18 and I'd lived there for nearly 20 years. And so my whole adult identity was around living in London, being in London. And the flat I lived in, I'd lived there for 10 years. And so many life events happened to me when I was living there. So I moved in, I got engaged, I broke up, lived on my own, met someone else, got engaged, had a baby, got married. And so the prospect of leaving that place, which was the best, safest home I've ever had, was heartbreaking. And I'm not even exaggerating. I cried so much. I ended up going to therapy and talking about what it meant to me to leave London and to leave that place, because so much of my identity was actually swept up with that place and that physical location. And it was, my husband was really great with this, because he's a born and bred Londoner, he's from Hackney. And actually, when I first met him, he said, oh, I'll never live in the suburbs. And then look at us, we're living in the suburbs. And he's actually really happy here. And he was just a lot more practical. And so I went through a very big emotional process about it. And the night before I signed the documents and exchanged, I said to him, I need to be on my own. So I spent an evening on my own, kind of processing, remembering, thinking, crying. And then when it came to the morning, I was ready to sign those documents and sign that place over. And so I would say as well, that if it does feel emotionally significant to you to leave a home or to leave a city, then take the time to process those emotions, take the time to think about it and say your goodbyes and let go and make space to welcome in the new. And even the day that we left, I was in the cab to our new place and I cried the whole way. And I was still saying to him, remind me, why are we leaving again? And he was very patient, saying, because we can't afford what we want. We want some more space. This is a great house we're moving to. And it, very patient in going over that with me. And then by the time we actually arrived, and my kids were with my eldest, she was with my parents that day, I started to feel excited about the new place. And we started to unpack and put some of the things that I loved from my old home around this new home. And that process helped me welcome in the new and feel excited about it. But it was a very emotional process for me. And like I said, one of those significant milestones in my life.
I bet. And how great that you were able to do all those things that were able to help you process that emotion, because sometimes in the rush and the, you know, the stress of it all, it's quite difficult to take stock of it and actually give yourself that time. And it also sounds like your husband very supportive to reinforce some of that to you. So good on you both. What about you, Caroline? How did you find the move emotionally, but also any thoughts on the impact of these moves with children? They're quite young to make the move, which in some ways is great. And my children, when certainly my youngest, I'm not sure really remembers being in London. But also it's quite difficult to prepare them for it, isn't it? Because it's just, you know, their understanding is fairly limited at that age.
Yeah, I agree. I think I definitely took it in two stages. And one was, I was very, very invested in where we lived. So I was very worried about fitting in when I moved back. There's a lot of days in 16 years, and you know, you just don't know how much you've changed or how much we're back has actually changed from that first day to the last day. I think there's a lot of different times in your life where it's easier maybe to throw yourself into things and to make the effort to make friends, figure out what you actually want from a situation. So say your early 20s, when I moved to London, everybody wants to be sociable, you want to go out lots, and the circle's very wide. And then in my case, in my early 30s, I had my girls and met moms in the baby groups, and that was a new dynamic for me. And then I think the pinnacle for me was that when my older daughter actually started school, I really found my tribe with some of the school moms, like more than any other time in my life, I really found my tribe. And that was only a year and a half before we made the decision to move. Also, as a family, we'd worked really hard in our house over the 6 years that we'd owned it. We did it up and it used up a lot of time. It was combined with having two very small kids. The house was really filled with very special memories. Everything Laura has said there, like, you know, I can feel it in my heart. we were quite late bloomers to becoming good hosts or having people around the house, or like, you know, having that house that people felt really comfortable to come to, leave the kids run around while away the hours. And, you know, we were quite late bloomers feeling we had actually set down roots, and then all of a sudden it was gone. We really didn't have that long period of time where we felt settled. Now I say that, but myself and my husband were on very different pages on it. I had maternity leave off in that house. I was home during COVID while he worked on site the whole time. So I really felt it was my home. I totally empathize with what Laura is saying about bricks and mortar. I failed to mention, now that we've moved to Ireland, I have a fantastic family here. Even in the 2 months we've actually been home, I've fallen back into natural rhythm with them, of being able to say, I'll pop down to you for coffee next weekend, or I can hop on the train to see my dad. Or, you know, it was my nephew's birthday, and just to be able to say that morning, oh, look, we'll call over later and drop off a present. It's a real treat. About 2 weeks before I moved, sadly, my mum actually passed away. And it did feel like it was a sign from her to actually make the move. Everything you said there, Laura, about, you know, that length of time, which I wasn't up for. I really wanted the move just to be expedited. But we had that length of time. With mom actually dying, the whole experience of her passing and the days after, it just reminded me, like, this is where I want to be and this is where I belong. I suppose then on the kids' front, that was a massive one for our family. Like, my older daughter was really invested in school. She had lots of friends, but above all, she was really wedded to the school. It was like this badge of honor for her. So for her, myself, my husband, this really was our biggest worry. Like, would any school compare to it? How would she adjust, you know, to the new routine? We really pitched it to both of our girls, and that would be my advice to anyone, that if we were lucky enough, that was kind of the tagline we were attaching to everything. If we were lucky enough to move to Ireland, we could see more of our cousins, our aunties, our uncles, our grandparents. We'd have more time together. And then from the day we made the decision, we just kept saying to them, what is the most important thing in the world? And we'd have them repeat back to us our four names and the dog's name, and that it didn't matter where we were once we were all together. And something that I really had to work hard on was balance being transparent with them, but not overselling it either, because I needed to still allow them live in the moment while we're in London. I wasn't doing that, and it's not a good thing. Like, it's certainly not healthy for anyone. I think where we dropped the ball was with our younger daughter. She's always been a bit more extrovert and confident. But recently it's become very clear she didn't understand the permanence of the move, and why would she? Like, she's four, and that is the only life she's ever known. And kind of span her in the works, and there's been many, is that she should have started school in London, but she's too young for the Irish system. So, you know, had I probably known that in advance of being in the thick of the journey, maybe that might have reframed things for us. I'm not yet sure, but that did come as a shock, that she wouldn't be able to start school when she moved here. So that was a bit of a setback for her. But then on practical terms, what we've been trying to do is just get the girls into little clubs, have their own little routines. Their London friends are their pen pals. And that particularly has been a great success for our younger one. And they really cannot get enough of the novelty of seeing their cousins. It's a lot of work, but we'll get there.
That's lovely, Caroline. And so do they start a year later in Ireland then at school?
I think it's 4 and 6 months, but our daughter is 4. So she's a June baby. And naturally, she would have been going to school in September, and she probably would have been the youngest in her class in London. But she, like, the school were reluctant to take her on. I think we really would have had to put a petition forward almost. And, you know, it's enough of a transition for her. If she has another softly year, that's no harm for her in the longer run.
Could work out for the best in the end, but it's hard when they're expecting to. I think it's such lovely advice there, Caroline, and really like using the language, you know, if we're lucky enough to go, and, you know, almost sort of practicing a bit of a mantra, isn't it? The most important thing is that we're all together. I think those are lovely practical pieces of advice, so thank you for those. What about the stress and the pressure on you as an adult? How did you find that process from the point of view of stress, and how did you manage that?
I think it definitely depends on everyone's different personality, but for me, all of the uncertainty was what caused huge stress for me, and the feeling that everything needed to line up in a specific order. And it was very expensive as well. Like, there's a huge monetary stress. So say our house sale, for example, you've very chunky fees on an estate agent who was all over us at the start of the process. We were the client, and then it got a bit tricky and he was missing in action. Our solicitor seemed to be just a pass-through entity and never acknowledged we were the client. And for me, that's a big pinch point I need to be communicated with in order to feel at ease. The list in terms of emotional practical stresses, it's very long, like, you know, down to little details such as trying to line up, I think you mentioned it, the removal van after you've exchanged, and we needed one that had an international capability. We realized 20 hours before we got on the ferry that our dog's passport wasn't valid because of Brexit. And I think really lacking the visibility of what our life would look like caused a huge amount of stress for me. No idea on how my job would pan out, how the kids would settle, ending up having to pause looking to buy a house, and we're actually now renting. It all just really made me feel very wound up walking away from that security that, you know, Laura expressed this as well, like that security, really feeling like this is your home and walking into the unknown. That for me was, I think, the peak stress.
And what about you, Laura? Anything further to add from your side?
I'd like to echo a lot of what Caroline said as well. And I think that something for me personally was we ended up moving to the town that I grew up in as a child, and we are a mixed heritage family. And when I grew up in that town, we were pretty much the only family that weren't white. And we'd come from having a very cosmopolitan life in London with our, at the time we only had one child. But the prospect of moving to a predominantly white area caused me a lot of anxiety, because I was just worried about, I guess, my children not being brought up with a lot of other cultures, a lot of different perspectives. And again, my husband was very helpful with this, because he's like, well, you grew up there and your parents did so much to, you know, keep your different heritages alive in the home. You know, it's not just about visibly who you see in the street, it's about books, it's about representation, it's about travel, it's about food, it's about cultures and celebrations. And that really reassured me. And London is an incredibly diverse place. It's probably one of the most diverse cities in the world. And it is worrying, particularly if you are not predominantly from a white family, to move somewhere where you might feel the outsider. And I think that we did a lot of thinking about that, and we did a lot of preparation and thought about the kind of home and environment we wanted our children to grow up in. And actually that wouldn't change whether we're in London or not. And I was really pleased to see that there's a lot of misconceptions I had about what it was like to grow up in the suburbs in this day and age, rather than when, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And my children do so much at school, which I didn't do. And we talk about Lunar New Year and we celebrate that. And my family is ethnic Chinese. And it's just very different now. And there's so much more awareness of difference, just lots of different types of diversity as well. It's not just about ethnic diversity, it's socioeconomic and all sorts. And I really wanted to make sure that my children had a very rich experience. And so far, I think that they are still having that. But that was a big anxiety of mine when we were leaving London.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's such a thoughtful perspective on this topic. You've both made me think very, very hard about house moves. I think I've got very caught up in the stress and the practicalities, and you've made me think much more deeply about it. So I really appreciate that. Before we conclude this podcast, a final thought from both of you, please. Either a sort of positive, practical piece of advice that people, listeners, might appreciate, or any just final thought and takeaway, please. Caroline, shall we start with you?
Yeah, there was two conversations carried me throughout the whole process. I called one of my brothers in March, and I was in tears, or very close to tears, telling him we were going to make the move. He actually lives in Ireland, so I think he couldn't understand why I was so upset. But I had followed it with and listed out every single hurdle that I felt was ahead of me. And he just said to me, none of this is insurmountable. And I've thought of that conversation, honestly, so much throughout the whole thing. And it would be my advice to anyone in the process of moving. None of it is insurmountable. And you can chip away at every single hurdle you come up against. And then the other conversation, which was with one of my sisters, she said, it seems like ages away, by Christmas, you'll be all set up and you'll be in your new routine. And I would actually say that to anyone as well. Set a realistic target for when you want the new life to replicate the old life or to replace the old life, and you work towards that.
Lovely. Thank you. Laura, how about you?
Thanks, Anna. I think a lot of it to me is about being quite self-aware, and I know that I'm a commitment phobe, and the prospect of living somewhere forever was terrifying to me. And so I said, well, it doesn't have to be forever. If it doesn't work, we can always move back. And realizing that I had options and I had outs was really helpful in getting me through. And we have no desire to move back, actually.
Good. Thank you both so much. It's absolutely wonderful to chat to you about housemates. It takes me back, and I'm glad I don't have to move anywhere anytime soon. But you're so right that both all of these things are reversible, surmountable. Anything can be changed. Nothing's ever set in stone, which is quite a relief, isn't it, to hear. I hope that's been useful for our listeners as well. Thank you very much for listening today. You can find out more about WorkLife Central at worklifecentral.com. You can download our new mobile app from the App Store or Google Play, and stay tuned for more from WorkLife Stories coming soon. Goodbye.